How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by the Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. One of the conversations that keeps coming up in the grain markets right now is about how investment dollars seem to be rolling out of equities and looking for a new job. Well, we've got an employer of a chunk of those dollars coming up in today's second hour of AgriTalk.
Live from AgriFlat Top Central via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll chat with Sal Gilberte from Tucrium. And in the final segment, Jason Tagte from Farm Mobile. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Baklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
It's another full show, dude. It's another
full show. Yes, it really is. I'm very excited.
Well, I am too. Yes. Tucrium ETFs, exchange-traded funds.
Gilberte.
You know, I got to thinking... Yep. Last week, after some of the conversations about, are we starting to see some money flow out of the equities and into the commodities? Mm-hmm. You start thinking about what is maybe a vehicle that a lot of those investors might feel most comfortable with in doing that rather than commodities. Sure. Could they be looking for an ETF? Well, let's talk to one of the guys that runs the ETFs and find out just how much money might be moving over there. Plus, Sal loves stock fundamentals. I mean,
perfect.
He loves stock fundamentals, short term, long term, mostly long term. But I'm looking forward to the conversation a bunch with Sal coming up here in just a little bit. And then at the end of the show, Jason Tatke from Farm Mobile. There's kind of a joint effort going on between Farm Mobile and ProFarmer to bring up to date real-time yield information from the field to those that to the marketplace. And I mean, it's kind of exciting, dude. It is exciting. And we're going to find out from Jason what they've got planned. Okay.
Wow. This is going to be one of those shows that you want to listen to the whole thing, sounds like to me.
The whole darn thing.
You don't just wait till my part's over and then shut it off.
Right, including Joe coming up here in just a bit. All right, man, let's get to what was moving things around.
Chip, dry conditions in the U.S. Southern Plains provided light support for wheat futures today, but after a slightly higher open, wheat trade turned choppy. USDA says 35% of the U.S. winter wheat crop was seeded as of September 27. That's up 15 points from the previous week and 2 points ahead of the five-year average. Anticipation of tomorrow's quarterly grain stocks and small grains summary also likely encouraged some long liquidation. September 1 wheat stocks are expected at 2.242 billion bushels, about 100 million bushels below year ago. Very little change from August is expected in the wheat crop estimate. December hard red winter wheat 6¾ cents lower, 4.76. December soft red slipped 0.75 cents to 5.49½. December spring wheat fell 5¼ cents to close at 5.24¼. Chip.
Yeah, so wheat is getting a lot of new information coming its way from USDA tomorrow, yet it feels like wheat has the least opportunity for surprise from the reports, which means, of course, that's where we may end up getting the surprise.
Position evening ahead of the grain stocks report also weighed on corn futures, and that and the lack of a daily export sales announcement, and the push to 15% complete on corn harvest, and the end of the month and end of the quarter position evening, with all that working against a price gain, corn futures still managed to close well above session lows after the December contract once again spiked support at 363. In tomorrow's quarterly grain stocks report, traders are looking for September 1 stocks of 2.25 billion bushels, up slightly from last year's 2.22 billion.
Yeah.
December corn futures fell 2 cents, 3.64¾. March corn off a penny and a half, 3.74. May corn, 3.79½, down 1½ today, Chip.
Yeah, you did a nice job laying out everything that was working against the price gain in the corn market today, but the way it came back and closed above that 3.63 in the D's, that was pretty impressive.
USDA this morning announced the sale of 100,000 metric tons of U.S. soybeans for delivery to Mexico in the current marketing year. but that failed to support prices because it wasn't a Chinese purchase. Well, all right. At least that's what some traders said anyway, adding price pressure. The 14-point jump in harvest to 20% complete as of September 27. That's 5 points ahead of the five-year average. Look at them go. Hedge pressure is expected to ramp up with clear harvest weather ahead. In the grain stocks report, traders are looking for bean stocks of 576 million bushels, down sharply from last year's 909 million bushels.
Yep.
November bean futures 3.25 cents lower, 9.93. Jan beans fell 3.25 to 9.97. March bean futures closed at 9.93¾, down 2.5 cents. The 10 handles are gone. That's all she wrote.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why they are gone. They're gone for now. You know, we just need to push this harvest a little forward a little bit more. Sal's got some comments on the seasonalities in corn and soybean prices. We'll talk about that here in a bit.
Cool. Well, the summer cotton was 40 points lower, 65.29. March cotton off 35 ticks, 66.03. On your livestock side, firm cash cattle trade supported cattle futures. October live cattle, 95 cents higher, 108.90. December cattle gained $1.47.5 to 113.12.5. October feeders gained $2, 142.92.5. And on the snout side, the close below $62 in December futures sets the stage for a push to fill the September 10 upside price gap. October hogs, 32.5 cents lower, 72.37.5. These hogs fell 205, 61.97.5. No hog music today.
No, that's all right. Okay. That happens. That Maybe happens. Tomorrow. Thanks, buddy.
Sure thing.
All right, let's bring in Joe Vaklovic, Standard Grain. How you doing, Joe?
Good. What's going on today?
Well, what was going on today was an inside day in D's corn with a mid-range close. I mean, going into a report, it's not much more meh than that, is it?
I still think the market's acting fairly well here, given everything that I know. Seasonally, it's been a totally contra-seasonal, second half of the year, basically. We rallied all through August into September. Now we've backed off a little bit. You've got the projection, at least on paper, of the highest stocks-to-use ratio in the United States since 2005. I mean, I don't think that any of this really supports D's corn at 365. I think that the fundamentals, as they stand on paper, probably support a price that's much lower than that. So I am thoroughly impressed with the market's action and not complaining by any means.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, what are you looking at most closely in the soybean market tomorrow?
Well, I mean, you could come in with a surprise in the stocks, and it could move the market. I don't know if there will be a surprise or not. It wouldn't be a surprise if I knew it.
Yeah,
I think the big things moving forward, I mean, how good is the crop here in the U.S.? I still think there's some debate about that, and we'll get another update on October 9th. And then you've got to keep your eye on Brazil. How big is the crop going to be? And when, it's not a when for me, it's an if. Or it's not an if, it's a when. When does China stop buying U.S. beans, and when do they start buying Brazilian beans? That's the question. Is it a month from now? Is it 2 months from now? That's the question for me.
Yeah, and we're very quickly, like you said, I think we're going to be very quickly going over to focusing on what is going on down in South America. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Yep, see you, Chip.
You bet. That's Joe Vaklovic, Standard Grain. Okay, let's talk ETFs. Let's talk fundamentals. We've got Sal Gilberte coming up from Tucrium next.
This special edition of AgriTalk is celebrating Dairy Week, paying tribute to America's dedicated dairy farmers and celebrating the dairy industry. Check out dairyherd.com/dairyweek for free access to our virtual content, sponsor showcase, and more exclusive resources. Dairy Week is presented by Elanco Animal Health and coverage brought to you by additional support from Aspen Veterinary Resources and Cargill Animal Nutrition.
From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
Show how you farm on by purchasing name brand merchandise from Farm Journal and Cowpokes Work at Western. Visit cowpokesonline.com right now, and $2 of every item purchased will be donated to 4-H.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Getting down, sir.
Getting down. Very excellent. Very excellent. All right. Sal Gilberte is the CEO of Tucrium ETF, and he joins us right now. Sal, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chip. Always good to be with you. It's fun.
Yeah, good deal. Good deal. Big reports coming our way tomorrow. Got that quarterly grain stocks report. I'm going to be focused on that. I think the wheat crop will kind of take care of itself in the small grain summary. And in the quarterly grain stocks report, I'm going to be looking most closely at soybeans because I'm anticipating that the 2019 bean crop is going to be increased in size, right? Because of that negative residual.
One would think, at least by the amount of the negative, right? And yeah. And in fact, I was speaking with Dan Sikander, whom you know, I think.
Yeah.
And he had the same take. You know, it's basically everybody expects that negative residual to go away, but the consensus is a consensus. I mean, I'm not sure how much they can surprise us other than, you know, maybe putting a few more beans in there than people expect. But you know what? The bean balance sheet is still the tightest of them all, and that's not going to change unless there's some just left field surprise with beans we just don't know about that are laying around.
Right. You know, I just want everybody to understand that bean crop is going to be increased in size. That does not mean that the September 1, 2020 bean stocks number changes much from the 576 that was anticipated. They've got the negative residual, negative 45 or negative 46 residual in the supply and demand balance sheet. So they could raise it 50 million bushels, take that residual to 5 million bushels of use, and it makes no change on the bottom line. So when you see that increase, in the crop, just understand that it's already been accounted for. And I can see it right now, Sal. It's going to be, geez, I can't believe they increased the bean crop estimate again. Prices got to go down.
Well, maybe, but that'll be opportunity for people paying attention. I mean,
there you go.
The story is usage. The story is demand on all of the big crops. But if you look at the export numbers that people are projecting, you know, in beans alone, the jump in the exports, it just wipes everything out. Don't forget, you know, last year, 909. Yeah. Now we're talking, you know, 575-ish, give or take.
Yep.
You know, what if we're down, USDA saying 460, we have private estimates down in the 300s, 380s. Now you're getting close. I mean, you start with the usage just rising every year, that 300 sacred ending stock number that you know, takes you from kind of tight to panic mode, that number, you got to start lifting that number a little bit. So ending stocks with a 3 handle, that's a big deal for soybeans, and people need to keep that in mind.
That's exactly right. You know, Sal, we're getting close to starting to tell the other side of the story about, I always like to talk about snowballing carryover, because you get the beginning stocks that are big enough that you can't get a crop that's small enough, and all of a sudden your ending stocks are snowballing until you get to 909 million bushels. Well, eventually that snowball hits the bottom and it breaks all apart. And then you go from 909 to 575 to 300 something million. And that's when it turns into a pretty, and it's, you're exactly right, Sal. It's the demand side of the market that has to drive that. You've got to get that demand back in the market. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it big time.
We're absolutely seeing it. In fact, China, I don't know any anybody that doesn't think that the 99 is going to be a rearview mirror number in terms of Chinese total Chinese imports that, you know, this coming year. China's out there buying like crazy, the beans and the corn. They clearly have a problem. And then rebuilding their swine herd, that, you know, that just sucks up everything that they can get their hands on.
Right, right. Well, we jumped right into it there, Sal. I didn't even ask the question, how's business?
Business is good from our end. I mean, we see flows, so we're long only funds. We just give people, investors, the opportunity who want exposure to the grains and don't trade futures to, you know, the opportunity to do that. And so we've seen tremendous flows this quarter. Over $120 million has come into our funds. And again, that, you know, that's just corn, soybeans, and wheat. And we put that straight into the markets unleveraged. So we're out there buying on behalf of our investors who come into our fund because they want that exposure. And that's a very big deal. You've got a falling dollar. You've got inflation fears. And inflation's an interesting little topic there as well, because if you look at the Fed data and factor out everything that's energy or energy related, we're already above their 2% target everywhere. And so there actually is inflation. Anybody who's been to the grocery store knows there's inflation. So we see a lot of inflation type money, people thinking about that coming in, and we just see a change. It hasn't been contra-seasonal. You generally, the seasonality in especially, you know, soybeans and wheat, we're coming up on October. We're 2 days away from what the University of Illinois says is the lowest on-farm price historically, and they went back 40-something years. I read that report. Is October for soybeans and corn. If we've done studies on the curve, so the next December, the following December futures contract generally sets its low in the fourth quarter. And that just goes right with the seasonal. We've got a seasonal corn study up on our website, and we tweeted it out at Two Cream ETFs if people are following that. And it shows a 20, 30-year study that comes from David Stendahl over at Signal Trading Group. He smooths the averages of 20, 30 years of corn and soybeans. And you put that low in the first week of October every single year. It's astounding. And again, that's built into the futures curve. It's tough to trade.
Right.
But the seasonality is there, the harvest seasonality. The world's two largest growers of corn are in the Northern Hemisphere, China and the United States. And this is when we harvest. So people get complacent. The pile gets on the ground, if you will, and then you just start taking out of it until next year when the harvest starts again. And that's a scary thing when demand – we're going to break a record. We're going to break another global usage record for corn, for soybeans, for wheat next year. That's astounding.
Right. That's astounding. Right. Yeah. You know, and at some point, Sal, at some point, I've got to believe that there's going to be a renewed competition for acres, because here in the United States, it felt like over the past few years, it's been beans saying, no, you know what, corn, you just go ahead and take it. And then corn says, we've had enough. You go ahead and take some acres back, beans. At some point, both corn and soybeans are going to need more acres. I don't know if it's for 2021. I don't know if it's for 2022, but at some point in the not too distant future, we're going to have both corn and soybeans it needing more acres in the United States. That's what starts the next big move in commodities, right?
I think you're absolutely right, and I think it's bigger than the United States. I mean, you know, Brazil's got a lot of expansion capacity, but China, let's not forget, China has sold more than 50 million metric tons out of state reserves. That, people doing the math, that's more than 2 billion bushels out of reserves, and the price isn't going down. So, you know, the price doesn't lie. It's real hard to get reliable data out of China. It's hard to believe them on anything. But when you can see the price of corn not declining, and when you could see the public announcement that they've sold 2 billion bushels of corn in the last, I think it's 14 or 15 weeks, out of state reserves, and the price isn't going down, China has a major, major supply problem. They need to come to the rest of the world for that corn and the beans and the wheat. There's a fight for acres. You're absolutely right, Chip. There's no doubt.
Okay. Yeah. Boy, this is going to be interesting as we make our way forward, Sal. The ETFs for a long-term investor that might be making a play like that, ETF is how you do it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, unless you're a futures trader, and most people aren't. And so, you know, that's the reason we listed these ETFs. They are that there's only one corn ETF, only one soybean ETF, only one wheat ETF. They are the only single commodity ETFs out there. And they, it's interesting because when you look back at studies comparing grains indexes to, say, the S&P 500, when you compare the just to put apples to apples, the S&P grains index, they keep track of one, and the S&P 500, in the last 10 times that the S&P 500 stock index has declined 10% or more, which is defined as a bear market, grains have outperformed 9 of those times, and sometimes in a very, very, very significant way. So investors, one of the reasons I believe we're seeing inflows and why people are finally waking up to how important grains are in a portfolio is good portfolio management, risk-adjusted returns. If you put 1 or 2 or whatever percent your numbers tell you to into the grain markets, stocks go down, grains might not, or at least they historically they've outperformed, and you have to eat.
Yeah, you have to eat. That's exactly right. Sal, when we come back, I want to continue this conversation of this flow of the investment dollars back and forth between commodities and equities. We're talking with Sal Gilberte from Tucriam ETFs. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Dr. Michael Cordonier sticks with his corn and soybean crop estimates and has a neutral bias going forward. Cordonier reports an already tight soybean supply situation in Brazil is tightening even further. He says Brazil may end up importing as much as 800,000 to 900,000 metric tons of soybeans. Talks are scheduled today after a 24-hour strike at Argentine ports. Australian producers welcome development of La Niña. Corn to shift more than China to shift more than 7 million households from coal heating to electric or natural gas. And China plans on importing around 5% of its pork needs in the future, which is actually more than what they've imported in the past. Check out all that ProFarmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Rumensin. Rumensin's quality, consistency, and efficiency make it the right choice for your dairy operation. Rumensin, trusted by generations. Rumensin is a trademark of Elanco or its affiliates.
Davis. Are they writing songs about you again, Davis?
The chafing is what gets you.
It's unbearable. It's unbearable. Mm-hmm.
Well, it is Dairy Week, right? I mean,
oh, stop! Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. That is Davis Michelson. We're talking with Sal Gilberte.
Yes, sir.
From Tucriam ETF. Before we get back to Sal, though, go ahead and recap how the market's closed. Mm-hmm. And then I want to bring Sal in for a little bit of breaking news.
Oh, very good. Well, December hard red winter wheat was 6¾ cents lower, 476. December soft red slipped 0.75 cents, 549.5. December corn futures fell 2 cents, 364¾. March corn slipped 1½ cents to 374. November soybean futures 3¼ cents lower, 9.93. January beans off 3¼ to 9.97. December cotton 40 points lower, 65.29. On the livestock side, October live cattle 95 cents higher, 108.90. October feeders gained $2, 142.92.5. And October lean hogs 32½ cents lower, 72.37.5. There's your quick market recap. What do you got, buddy?
All right, let's bring Sal back in here because I want to get his reaction to this as we go. Sal, we were talking about the potential for USDA to increase the 2019 bean crop estimate. Well, here's the breaking news from Wiesmeyer. Okay? Some trading houses put out reports today saying that they have confirmed that NASS may adjust, not might adjust, not could adjust, not should adjust, but may adjust the corn crop. In the past, they have reviewed soybeans, waiting until the January annual production summary to do so for corn. But reports from some trading houses notes NASS told them there is a change in policy, and corn may also be adjusted in this report beginning this year. But if true, observers say USDA's NASH should have put out a release notifying everyone of that possibility because it could be market sensitive. Gosh, Sal, you know, when it comes to that crop, that corn crop estimate from a year ago, they hide that number or any miss on the corn crop in the feed and residual category on the usage side, Sal. I don't know if this makes a whole lot of difference or not.
I agree. And plus, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I think they have adjusted the corn before. And so, you know, in this report, so I wouldn't think it's that big a deal. That said, you know, if you look at the corn market, you look at the quarterly performance here, the corn market is really the only one that's kind of ending the quarter about where it started the quarter. Whereas, okay, you know, beans and wheat kind of have that premium in. So corn's the one that can surprise here when you look at it from that perspective, where things are tightening all around the world. The USDA doesn't need to, you know, come in with a very tight balance sheet on corn. They might adjust the number, and they still might come in at, you know, that 2.5 billion. But in the ending stocks, most of the private people with whom we speak and that we really, you know, utilize, they're down closer to 2.1. I think the surprise in this report can actually come from corn. People are looking at beans. They're looking at wheat because, you know, we do have the problems in wheat with it not raining in some pretty important places. But yeah, corn can surprise people, and corn's the sleeper in price. If you look back at the quarter, corn's the one that's kind of,
Sal, during the break, I went and looked at the chart, the seasonal study corn chart that you were talking about that is from Signal Trading Group. Not only is that early October your seasonal low on both the 20-year and the 30-year averages, but on the 20-year average, it gets back up on average above the previous spring or summer high by the time we get to the end of the year.
Yeah, and again, those are smoothed averages. That's also generally built into the futures curve, okay? So, you know, the people who are really watching, they understand this stuff, and it gets built into the curve. But that said, there is generally opportunity for people who've missed a contra-seasonal move, which we've had, especially in you know, the beans and wheat here this quarter, because generally you do see a decline in, you know, from July 1st. And so, yeah, there could be some opportunity here, especially in the corn. To me, corn's the one that's going to surprise, if there's a surprise.
Okay. That is the counter thinking, the counterintuitive thinking that I love when you and I get an opportunity to have a chat, Sal. I love that. Love that.
It's fun.
So the money that is moving into the ETFs, is it coming out of equities, or is it just the simple fact that there isn't as much money going into equities and it's being diverted instead to the ETFs?
There's no way for me to honestly know the answer. I suspect it's the latter. I suspect that you know, equities are pretty healthy, and people are so used to getting good returns out of equities, it's kind of hard to break that. And why? Yeah. You know, if it's working, don't mess with it.
Yep.
But that said, people are starting to allocate clearly into alternatives. And as you know, it's a pet peeve of mine that you look at the oil ETFs, and there are, you know, tens of billions in there. You look at the gold ETFs, it's got to be approaching $100 billion. Of money in gold. And you look at all the total, you know, U.S. agricultural ETFs out there, and they're barely $1 billion when you combine them all. And that's not right, that you can't eat, you know, you can't eat the other two. You need to have a proper perspective and know what's important. And
well, the amount of money that rolled into lumber here recently, Sal. Yeah.
Agreed. And the amount of money is going to roll out as well. Yeah. Lumber's up.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's very true. Very true. Uncertainty in these markets, it seems to me that an ETF, if you want to be on the long side of the grains, But you're hesitant to do it in futures because of all the uncertainty out there. ETFs might be a way to do it. And with La Nina developing, Sal, I mean, I said it at the bottom of the hour that Australia is saying, thank you, La Nina's coming back. We can get some rain in here. But it could mean a dry season for South America. It could mean a dry season ahead for the United States. How does that work into all your thinking?
Well, I think that that's definitely part of the supply side doubts that we have. We've already talked about the soy and corn competing for acres. You know, wheat, it's just dry in a lot of places. But then you throw La Nina in there. That's a very big deal because consistently La Nina will give you a dry southern South America, and that's already happening. I mean, they've already pushed the soybean planting a bit. So that's going to affect soybeans. That's going to affect Safrina, which is a big deal because they're pushing that soybean planting out because of the dryness. Interestingly, I think when we set a record in wheat prices, all-time global price record, it was because of back-to-back droughts in Australia. And if I'm not mistaken, the last one was because of a La Nina. So while Australia does get some rain in some parts, they also get dryness in other parts. It's pretty hard to predict because it's still weather. So in general, La Nina is bullish for the row crops because it affects the United States, because it affects southern South America with dryness in those producing regions. But, you know, that doesn't always happen either. But La Nina is definitely in a supply side concern list. That's in the box on the supply side concerns.
Right, right. Speaking of uncertainty and factors that add a lot of uncertainty to the equities, to the commodity outlook, you going to be watching the debate tonight?
Of course. Yeah. How can you not?
Exactly. Exactly. I'm going to be watching it too. But the election, Sal, is it having much impact on money flow through treasuries, equities, commodities?
I think it is. I think that people are, in general, no matter what the outcome of the election, people see some stimulus spending. They see inflation. Because of that stimulus spending, they may or may not see a weaker dollar, depending on their perception of which side wins. And I think the Farm Belt, I'm not sure it's responsible for money flow right now, but I think, you know, farmers are looking at this going, you know, Trump's been good to farmers. And some in the party, especially out California way, they have not spoken highly of farmers. And so I think that if there is an outcome where Trump, you know, loses the White House, I'm not so sure that in the long run that bodes well for farmers specifically, for the ag sector specifically. And nobody's ever going to pull the rug directly on ags, but ags are great beneficiaries right now of President Trump's policies. And so I just read an article somewhere that was directly about ags in terms just of the regulatory burdens that are being loosened for farm producers and all kinds of things. If those start to be tightened again, and all that contributes to, you know, inflation, more regulations, anything that has to do with production, either harming it or increasing the cost of it, is going to raise prices in general. So I think no matter which party wins the White House, you're going to see some spending come in. That may be great for equities, which may keep money from coming into ags and commodities a little bit. But I think the inflation story is a bigger picture. And again, it's not just us printing money. It's the whole world printing money. And so the perception is going to be that eventually we hit the wall and that inflation comes and, you know, you want to own stuff if there's inflation. And
love it.
Are certainly vital stuff.
Exactly, because we eat them, and everybody's got to eat. You keep coming back to that point, Sal, and it's a good point to keep coming back to, sir. Man, I enjoy these conversations. We should do them more often.
We should. It's always fun. Always fun.
Absolutely.
We love your music. Keep it coming, as you know. We love
you. You got it. That's Sal Gilberte, Tucriam ETFs. When we come back, we are going to have a conversation with the guys from Farm Mobile next on AgriTalk.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Corteva for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
You know, sometime, Davis, we're going to have to get Varsity Joe on here and play this song for him on the pump music. And
I was going to say, I would like to also recognize Grease Hog.
Yeah, Grease Hog.
Grease Hog. Spelled just like it sounds. Hog.
All right. Want to talk some data? Data management?
Always.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jason Tatji is the CEO of Farm Mobile, and he joins us right now. Jason, how are you, man? It's good to talk with you.
I'm doing really good. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Now, Jason, data in, data analysis, putting the right, taking the right direction from the data, and then making the right decisions from it. It's a big challenge. Everybody's trying to do it all the time, and at Farm Mobile, trying to simplify that challenge so that guys can make better decisions, right?
That's the whole goal. You know, the whole goal is to be able to make it easy to get data in, get it organized, and so you can start to use it to make, at least to feel better about the decisions you're making on your own operation.
How many guys are doing a good job of it, Jason?
You know, I would say that a lot of the larger operations have dedicated people to do it, so they're doing a fairly good job of it. I would say that there's a larger percentage, I'm going to say that's maybe 10% of the acres have good planting records that are accurate and complete that they can match up with harvest records. I think there's, you know, probably a 90% opportunity for people to collect some data and start to get those planting records and those harvest records to match up so they can really understand what products are performing best on the dirt that they're farming.
Yeah. You know, one of the original real-time data feeds was that yield monitor. And you're doing something cool with that, Jason. Tell us about it.
So, you know, the yield monitor it's the thing that's been sitting out there for a long time, and the farmers are the creators of this data. And so we're trying to create a way that, since they're the first ones to see that data, how can we give them an advantage in the marketplace? And so what we're doing is we're streaming data out of cabs of our subscribers, and then we're aggregating it on a nightly basis. So we're putting out a state yield number based upon actual ground truth data that's being collected by the farmers who are subscribers to Farm Mobile.
So in other words, there's no more sitting in the combine cab looking at your yield, and at the end of the day, you see what your average yield was and wondering how it stacks up with everybody else in the state, because you can get how it stacks up against everybody else in the state, right?
Yeah, on an overnight basis, we'll bring all that together, and that should help you in your marketing decisions. You know, if you're seeing, I was a grain trader in my past, and when I have a lot of guys calling me during harvest, it generally means that their yields are a little bit larger than, you know, than they anticipated, which is why they're so interested right now. They got a little extra to sell. And the odds are, you know, if yours are a little bit better, maybe your neighbors are a little bit better, and maybe their neighbor, you know, it's probably a better feel for the region. And as a grain buyer at that time, I get a feel that a lot of people might have a lot of extra, so it helped, you know, I'm a smart guy and I widen my basis. So if we can kind of set out a product where you can start to see if that yield number versus what the expectations are a little bit higher or a little bit lower, it's going to help you feel more confident in those decisions when it comes time to pulling the trigger on those extra bushels you got during harvest.
Perfect. Love that. Okay, Pro Farmer Harvest Report powered by the Farm Mobile Index. What is this?
So on a weekly basis, we're going to take the numbers that we have and we're going to make them available to ProFarmer subscribers, and then we're going to have a discussion about it on a weekly basis with you all to kind of update on what we're seeing coming in as this new piece of information can, you know, slowly drip its way into the market.
Yeah. You know, I sit here, Jason, and I think about it, and I think about how powerful this kind of information could be, and it might be. But you got to have a big data set behind it. How much ground are we covering with the Farm Mobile Index?
You know, we're probably going to get, I'm hopeful that we get to probably about 1.5 million to 2 million total acres this year by the time harvest is done with all of our subscribers.
Okay.
And so, you know, is it a massive piece of data as a percentage basis? It's not. But the information out like this, the opportunities out like this, we believe that we're going to attract subscribers and we're going to continue to make the index a more powerful tool for the grain marketing that happens from our subscribers. And the more data you can get there, the more accurate it's going to become. And let's be real, you know, there's a lot of old processes that could be modernized when we start to release a lot of numbers to the market. And I think a steady drip of information to the market that's predictable is going to help us reduce our overall volatility in the futures market due to these massive swings that we see from these reports that come out that are already in arrears anyways by the time they're released.
Yeah, that's interesting. The steady drip to remove some volatility. That's an interesting thought, Jason. It seems to make sense. I want to make it very clear that we're talking about aggregated data. We are not talking about, okay, when I pull up the data, I'm going to be able to see how my yields from today compare to Joe Smith's yields from today. It's aggregated data, correct?
It's aggregated at the state level. So think of the state as one big boundary. And when you log in as a subscriber, you're going to see that state level's boundary for the information that's been collected in that state. And we allow users to see the information available in other states as well. And that's part of the feedback we've gotten from a lot of our growers, that it's interesting to see what's happening in other states that they normally wouldn't have access to, when they're just trying to make their marketing decision.
All right. How do we get more information on this, Jason?
You can go to farmmobile.com, and we're happy to answer any questions we have. This is one of those personal things where people are really, an independent company like we have to be private is really important to us, and we're happy to answer questions with the good old-fashioned phone calls.
Excellent. We'll talk to you a week from today with some of the first numbers, all right?
I look forward to it.
Excellent. That is Jason Tatke. He is the CEO of Farm Mobile. Real quick, National Weather Service 6 to 10-day outlook for October 5th through the 9th. We've got above-normal temperatures now expected in the western half of the Corn Belt, normal temperatures in the eastern half of the belt, below normal precipitation expected over the entire Corn Belt. The Pro Farmer Harvest Report, powered by Farm Mobile Index. Davis, this is going to be really interesting to see how it all develops this year.
Super big really deal, cool. Especially this year.
That's right. That's right. Okay, tomorrow morning, we are talking cow comfort with Dr. Gordy Jones, and then we got a farmer forum with Wisconsin Farm Bureau President Joe Bragger and Oregon producer Derek Josie. Tomorrow afternoon, Davis and I have got detail. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.